Welcome to this edition of the Beef Roundtable. I'm Dr. Ron Lemonager, Beef Extension Specialist here at Purdue University, West Lafayette, Indiana. And I'll be working with my co-host, Bert Rutherford.
Howdy, I'm Bert Rutherford, Senior Editor of Beef Magazine, and I'm based in Denver, Colorado. Each month on the Beef Roundtable, we discuss current topics with industry experts, talk about things that are really a concern to all beef producers.
The Beef Roundtable is recorded live and edited to fit the time constraints of the program. The programs are available at the Beef Magazine website, iTunes, YouTube.com, as well as www.beefroundtable.com.
Our topic today, we're going to kind of use the recent wildfires that happened in Kansas, Oklahoma, Colorado, Nebraska, kind of as a jumping off point to talk about natural disasters. But we're not going to talk about those disasters in terms of rebuilding from the ranch or that sort of thing. We're going to talk about them from an aspect that many cattle producers really just don't talk about. And that is the emotional aspects of those disasters and recovering from them emotionally in the aftermath. Because oftentimes that recovery can be very difficult and can take quite a long time. So we're going to delve into that a little bit today.
Our first guest is Dr. Kirk Drennan, Community Outreach Branch Supervisor within the Operations Section of the Colorado Office of Emergency Preparedness and Response. Dr. Drennan is a licensed psychologist and has been working in the area of behavioral health disaster planning and response since 2002. He's worked in partnership with a diverse stakeholder group to improve the state's capacity to respond to the psychosociological impacts of disaster and public health emergencies. He has 23 years of experience in the fields of mental health and psychology, particularly in the areas of crisis intervention and behavioral health disaster management.
We're also joined today by David Clausen, a rancher near Englewood, Kansas. David is also president of the Kansas Livestock Association. David's a fourth-generation rancher and farmer with ownership interests in various family partnerships. The Clausen Ranch Partnership with his brother Dan includes a cow-calf business, and irrigated and dry land farming. David and his brother were not only personally affected by this spring's wildfires, but he has visited with many other ranchers who were also affected to help them recover both physically as well as emotionally. In addition, David has done numerous media interviews exactly on this topic, how fires have affected him, not just personally,
Gentlemen, let's get right at the issue at hand. David, can you describe what you've learned in the aftermath of the fires regarding how the disaster has affected ranches and ranchers?
Sure. First, thank you for this opportunity to address this topic. I expect to learn a lot from Dr. Drennan. You know, when the fire hit right there at the start, we were in shock. I suppose we were in shock for 4 or 5 days. You know, we were on an adrenaline high for a couple of days, but you hear so many stories from so many people as to who got hurt and whose house burnt down and what happened and how many cattle lost and everything. And it took a couple of days for us all to be able to get a hold of everyone and find out what the true stories were. A lot of rumor running around. But then we were all concerned about each other that first week, and it was, I don't know, I've told other people, it was it brought the community together like we had never been before. We all get busy in our own lives, and we pass a neighbor, and we don't always stop to talk, but there was a lot of visiting that first week or two. And then, you know, the reality of what really happened after that first week started to set in, and then a number of people started wondering, well, what do we do now? And we get locked down, And what happened in our area is people started showing up, and we weren't allowed to really get into a shell because neighbors and people from across the nation showed up, and they forced us out of the house. And it was good because it forced us to start doing something. We didn't know what to do, but we were doing something. And hay was coming in, so we had to take care of the cattle that we had left. But then what do you do next? So I guess I don't know where to go, but we've had the gamut of a lot of different ranchers that have either been able to express their emotion and understand the loss. And, you know, all of us that we all did a lot of crying that first week because, you know, it was just the enormity of it all. But there's a number of people that have just want to put it behind us. It's behind us. Let's look forward. And that's good. We need to do that. But there's processes, I think, that we'll learn about here after a while that we probably need to address, because I think those things come back and bite you eventually. Other people have been able to be very open about it and talk about it and work through. I guess Dr. Drennan, and I sit there and I think about, you know, it's probably a lot similar to losses of family members. You know, you go through those things and there's all these different stages. And I figure we probably have to go through a lot of those as well, those same emotions. And we've seen the gamut of them, you know, from the anger to, you know, the magnitude of loss, and then some people just haven't even addressed it. So I don't know if that answers your question enough, Ron, but that's kind of where I'd start.
And I think that's a great start to place. I think that that's a great place to start, okay, in this discussion I appreciate your responses to that.
Dr. Drennan, let's follow up a little bit on that, some of the comments that David made. What tips do you have for folks who are recovering from an event such as a natural disaster? How do you cope with that?
I think we all look for the easy silver bullet, and we want to say, how do I cope with that and have an easy answer? So first, let me kind of start back with where David started with this. Thanks for including me and let me be part of this process. Because these events do take a toll and they have a real impact on people. And David's experience is so common that sudden loss, that experience of everybody coming together and you kind of ride this heroic high and this very community bond that happens as everybody kind of comes in and supports the process. Having that social network come in and yank you out of the house and not let you just sit, that's a wonderful strength. And not everybody has that. So we tend to really run the gamut of experience with events like this. And it's really important to recognize that what we do in that initial out-of-the-gate response, when these disasters hit us and our communities, we're almost driven to act and react as quickly as possible. It's a life-saving process. It's a community-saving process. It helps to save our economy that we rely on so much. And we can only maintain that for so long. So one of the most important things that we can really do to cope with these events is to recognize that things are now different and it's really going to take a long time before they start feeling normal again. I often hear people after a wildfire, after a flood, they kind of set these timetables for themselves of, I will be back to quote-unquote normal within a month, 6 months, a year. Then the reality kind of sets in that it'll take 18 months, 2 years, 3 years to really begin feeling, wow, I'm back somewhat to normal. And that's just kind of the nature and process of grief and loss. When a wildfire hits like this, it so changes the dynamics of the community, of the ranch itself. What was a day-in, day-out expectation, friendly routine that you really counted on. You expected to be in certain places at a certain part of the day throughout the month, and how that changes through the seasons. We are creatures of habit, and that routine really helps us maintain the momentum of life, so to speak. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And disaster shatters that routine. Disaster tends to, while we want to go out and help our neighbors, there's only so much we can do. Then we've got to also kind of take care of our own. And so we've got this pull, push-pull experience of wanting to help others and needing to take care of our own business, our own ranch, our own home. And so you get this tension between these various needs and various desires of action to take. And then most importantly, we've got to recognize that grief takes some time to work through. And really what I mean by that is grief is this process of, in life, we're kind of cruising along. We have those habits. We have those routines. And we project those routines into our future. We expect, we know what's going to happen tomorrow. We know what's going to happen next week or next month or even 10 years from now. We can take what we're doing today and project that out, whether that's our business, whether that's our relationships, our family, our spouse, our neighbors, the community we live in. We can kind of predict where we're going. Disasters shatter that. And that very important process of recognizing the loss and starting to plan a new future is what grief is all about. And it's not a light switch. So there's, I know, David, you were talking about those individuals that just say, okay, this has happened. We've just got to look forward and move forward. Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. And there's this process of we've got to look back. What was the expectation? What were my plans? How do I take this road that I was on and shift it into this world, this road that I am on now? We've got to build that bridge of what was to what is so that we can kind of start putting those pieces back together. Because we have to re-knit this expectation of what life is. That's that goal of recovery.
So, you talked about normal taking 2 to 3 years maybe for us to feel normal. A lot of us around are saying, well, we're into a new routine now, and it's been 90 days, and we're blessed with rain and fresh green grass growing. It's beautiful, and our new normal is getting perimeter fences up and trying to figure out, you know, how to restock with cattle that we lost. But that new normal isn't the normal, is really what you're saying. We've got to go through this time period of dealing with all this. And so it's not going to be as quick as what we want.
Absolutely. And it's such a process that you have to almost re-experience over and over. So as you're putting up the new fences, there will be times that, you know, you're into a real rhythm and you're planting the post and you're stretching the wire and you're moving down the field, and then a smell will catch you. The light of the sun will catch you. A sound in the distance will catch you, and you'll go, whoa. All of a sudden I'm back to the days before the fire, or I'm back to the days of the fire. And you kind of get that lump in your throat, that punch in the gut feeling of, I'm kind of tired. I'm kind of exhausted. I'm working 24/7 to catch back up just to be where I was. And the energy expounded in that process in and of itself, trying to catch up to where you were, takes that toll and then brings you back into a frustration or even an anger of, why did this happen? And then we kind of sometimes have those experiences of this challenges our belief systems or our faith. Why did this happen? What went wrong? What did I do wrong? And you kind of go through that questioning process. And that's even natural and normal for a natural disaster like this, when absolutely wasn't anybody's fault. But all of a sudden we start feeling like, what did I do that created this? Or what should I have done differently? And that blame process plays out. Again, that's another part of the natural cycle of recovery, is we're trying to make sense of this. And one of the powerful things of being human is we've got this brain that is constantly problem solving. And part of that problem solving is making sense of what has just happened. But sometimes there's no easy answer to that. And we struggle with the fact that there's no easy answer.
You know, you've talked a little bit about the loss of animals. We've talked a little bit about, you know, maybe the case of loss of homes, some cases loss of life when these disasters hit. But does this flashback that you referred to, okay, as you hear sounds, you know, you see sights, you pick up smells, Is part of the flashback going to be kind of a financial flashback? You know, I mean, while a lot of feed came in, you know, to the Kansas wildfire, for example, the Kansas, Colorado, Texas area wildfires, but, you know, that doesn't pay all the bills, okay? There's still going to be some fence costs. There's still going to be the restocking cost. You know, there's going to be some equipment that's probably going to need to be replaced. You know, buildings may be replaced. You know, how does that economic thing play into this whole psychology of the loss? And it seems like to me that probably magnifies this whole impact.
Ron, you're spot on, because it absolutely magnifies the impact. Because as we're going through life, and like I was talking about, that expectation that we create, part of that expectation is our financial life. You know, I'm working toward that easier life. I'm working toward having been able to sock away a nest egg. I'm looking forward to having a different kind of life with my spouse or with my kids or at some day grandkids. And disasters are expensive. Not only do they take that toll in the environment, take the toll on the economy itself. In this situation, took toll on the infrastructure of the ranches, the loss of cattle. But now all that has to be replaced just to get back to square one. And that loss of that future hope, that loss of that future expectation of what was going to be, is largely financial. Absolutely.
Well, Dave and Kirk, what about the families? I mean, you know, we kind of, you know, think about owners, okay? We think about husband and wife. What about the kids? What about, you know, the ranch help, you know, the small community right there on the ranch itself, you know, it's not just the rancher who is an emotional investment in the operation, but other family members as well. How can we help each other or help those others that might not have been financially vested per se, okay? And, you know, it wasn't their livestock, it wasn't their home, but they're part of that. Any comments on that from either one of you?
I can just say a few things. I'd like to hear more from Dr. Drennan, but, you know, in these small communities, everyone's part of the volunteer fire department. So you got all the employees that are invested in the whole infrastructure within the community. They're not only helping on the ranch, but they're helping the community as well. So they were right in the middle of the whole disaster. There's a number of those, that I went to a debrief, I guess, of the Inglewood Fire Department the Sunday after the fire that was on Monday. And the stories that they had, it was really good that they were able to express it. But I think that a lot of the employees, if you just think about them, they are financially vested because they're wondering, do I have a job? You know, is this ranch going to be viable enough and be able to get the cash flow going again for the job? So I haven't heard anyone say that, but I can imagine they would because I know the ranchers are thinking, there's some of them that are thinking, am I going to be able to stock back to be able to pay for this? You know, and Dr. Drennan just talked about that side of the whole deal. So we're one big community and it takes everyone to be a part of it.
Go ahead, Bert.
I was just going to say, Dr. Drennan, what are your thoughts?
This is kind of that complication, and sometimes it's so hard to articulate. I think emotionally what we do often culturally is we don't give each other permission to be stressed out, to be sad about this loss, to be angry about the loss, to be frustrated, to even lose hope. Sometimes those emotions, we say, okay, that's a sign of weakness, or you really got to suck it up just in order to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And then we don't talk about it. We don't ask the questions of our spouses. We don't ask the questions of our kids. We don't ask the questions of our employees. We don't allow them to ask us questions about how are we doing? What's showing up? What are we feeling? Are we frustrated? Are we hurt? Are we sad? Are we angry? For fear that if we bring it up, then somehow we're responsible and we have to fix it. We're afraid of bringing it up for fear that, oh, maybe if I bring it up, that person hasn't been thinking about it. And now I'm all of a sudden making them think about it. Or we don't bring it up because we don't feel like we know what we could say to further the conversation. And sometimes all we need is that permission. The permission to say, I don't know. The permission to say, yeah, I'm really kind of angry right now. The permission to say, I'm really sad. I had hopes that we were going to be doing A, B, and C this year, and we're not. And that's a really big loss. That permission to just kind of get a hug from our spouse or give a hug to our kids and get a hug from our kids and cry a little bit. Like you said, David, you know, that first week was filled with tears. That's awesome. There can be, maybe even should be, tears next month, next year, as kind of different phases of this recovery kind of re-trigger that process of loss and coming to terms with the new normal. But giving each other that permission, I think, is a critical aspect of recovery.
Let me ask a follow-up question to your comment, and that is, you know, agricultural people tend to be very proud. We tend to be independent, and we don't like to show weakness, okay? And so it's kind of what you're really getting at is that we don't talk about it sometimes because we don't want to show that you know, we don't have the answer. We don't have the solution. We don't, you know, I don't want to break down and cry, okay? And sometimes, I mean, if we make the analogy that this is like the grieving process, at some point, maybe you've got to cry, you know? And it's hard for us to maybe sometimes do that with somebody else around. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And this is my challenge, especially to men, is to be the leaders that we want to be the fathers, the spouses we want to be, means that we've got to be a little bit more vulnerable and connect with those people that we lead and that we love. That kind of leadership actually makes us stronger men. And it helps us do our jobs better. Because two heads are always better than one. Five heads are always better than two. So the more input, the more ideas, the more creativity that we can allow in the recovery process and admit that I don't have all the answers. I need help. Give me your ideas. Give me your creativity. What are you thinking here? This is how I think maybe it should be done. Give me feedback. That's actually a strength, not a weakness. You know, that willow that bends in the wind, especially those Kansas and Oklahoma winds that can hit 70 miles an hour without a tornado, is a stronger organism than the oak that can get really brittle and break in those strong winds. So that flexibility, that ability to invite others' ideas and thoughts and inputs, experience and emotion into the process makes each one of us individually stronger and then makes us as a family or as a community more resilient and stronger in the face of this disaster and the next.
Dave, you were going to say something here a minute ago.
Yeah, I'd like a free counseling session here. So we as ranchers, we sit there and we've got these employees and we want them to be confident that, you know, they're going to have something here. They need to see confidence in us. And I see that across the board. We all want to let them know that this, we're going to move forward and this is going to be okay and they're going to be okay. And I understand your idea, showing the vulnerability, and maybe I don't know. How do I help other ranchers see that? I mean, give me an idea as to what do I say to them? How do I get them to say, this is okay? I mean, that's a hard one because of that pride that Ron was talking about. We all have it.
So my gut response to that question often is, is what you're doing right now working? Say it differently. Having that confidence that we're going to get through this is very important. And that confidence that we're going to get through this, that, for lack of a better word, that hope that we're going to be stronger because of this, is that is augmented by that ability to say, and right now I don't have the answer. But together, we can create the answer. That doesn't mean I'm giving up. It means right now I don't have the answer. Give me time, give me input, give me other resources, and I know I'm going to get to the answer. And or we're going to get to the answer. But too often, you know, that barrier comes up, that protectiveness that says, okay, I've got to exude this confidence. I've got to not show that vulnerability so that people will follow or so that people won't run away. And then too often that rebuffs people's want or wish to help. Okay, David, you got this. You don't need any help. I'll sit back and relax, and I'll wait for you to tell me what to do. That doesn't help you. It doesn't help your family. It doesn't help your employees, your hands. But if you give them the opportunity to share their experience, their perceptions, their ideas, then that actually helps them buy into your leadership, your ideas even more, because now they feel heard and included. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's what we need to do every day, even when we don't have the disaster, you know, to get
exactly. Yes.
I get that. So I just know that we all have that pioneering spirit that, you know, we've got ancestors that went through tougher things than this, and they made it through. So we know we can make it through. We do have that confidence, and I have yet to talk to anyone that doesn't have that confidence. But maybe I'm just thinking about how do we get family members and these employees. And I think you answered that well. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Drennan and David both, you know, much of the conversation I think we've had up to this point has been talking about how do we help each other, how do we help ourselves as we go through this grieving process and the healing process that we have to go through when you experience something like this. At what point or what should you look for in terms of seeking outside help? When do you know you need to do that? Where do you go if you come to that realization that talking about it to the dog and the horse just isn't getting me where I need to be?
You want to jump in first, David, or you want me to just dive in?
You're the guy. I need to hear the answer, too.
Well, it's one of those questions of it depends. And some real key things to be thinking about. When we've gone through a disaster, when we've been hit with such huge challenges, it actually biologically impacts our ability to think. It makes it difficult to plan. It makes it difficult to problem solve. It makes it difficult to even focus on the task at hand sometimes. All that's really normal. Going through processes like this, you may notice lack of sleep. You know, sometimes it's just hard to go to sleep sometimes because your head's just spinning about all the things that have to happen tomorrow, or all the questions you've got, or all the answers that you're trying to find. Your head's just spinning like crazy. Or your appetite might disappear. Or vice versa, your appetite might just explode. You're just hungry all the time, or you're sleeping all the time. Again, those are pretty normal responses. One of the big signs of when you need to seek further support, whether it's a minister, a really good friend, or a mental health professional, is when life starts kind of shutting down. When you're having the difficulty day in and day out, most of that stuff will be much more transient. You'll have it for a day or two, and then all of a sudden you'll get the energy back, and you'll almost be functioning on a high for a couple of days, and then kind of go back into a lull period. But it's that difficulty of around processing information and thinking and making decisions persists for 3-4 weeks. When your appetite goes away for several weeks at a time, or that sleep sets in for several weeks at a time, or you start thinking, it'd be better if I wasn't here. I'd get insurance. My family would benefit if I wasn't here. Those suicidal kind of thoughts. or sometimes that the rage can really build up and you're just wanting to rip everybody's head off, so to speak. Those are some really important kind of red flags to say, I need to process this out. And I say process. Much of what we consider dysfunction comes from the fact that we haven't talked about it. In many ways, we have two brains. We have the human brain, the executive functioning brain, the logical and verbal brain. And then we have the emotional brain. And one of the things that talking about it does is help bridge those two brains. It helps that logic side, that verbal side, understand the emotion side, and vice versa. Kind of helps those two brains come back into alignment with each other. When we allow that stuff to just spin in our head, those two brains stay separate. We don't fully understand it yet, but there is something that happens biologically when we talk about our experience, when we talk about that emotional experience, that emotional pain, sadness, anger, frustration, loss, grief. When we're talking about that stuff, it changes.
No, and just to take that one step further, you know, that emotion piece, okay, or the emotional side of the brain can have a pretty significant effect on your health. Does that kind of fit together as well?
Absolutely, because what's happening kind of emotionally, especially in a disaster event like this, is the whole situation is being read by our bodies as one big threat. So we're constantly in this stress response, this fear response, this fight response to tackle the threat. So this fire has come through your communities and it's eliminated resource. It's become that financial threat because of all this loss. And therefore, then it becomes a threat to relationship, to the vacation you were going to take, to the friendships that you have, because you're not spending time with your friends, you're not going and hanging out, whether it's church or other kind of social gatherings. All that becomes this huge part of the loss. And our bodies are in this fight, I got to catch up, I got to take care of this. And so literally our bodies are being bathed in these stress hormones that have us ready to both fight or flee from the process. So it's kind of like putting nitro in your car. It works great for a brief period of time. But over time, you're going to break that engine block. Same way with stress. It's great to get us up and get us moving for a short burst and period of time. If we try to maintain that too long, it can have a real negative impact on our health.
Let me follow up then. So, you know, in the days that are coming, okay, you know, we're 90 days roughly away from the fire, okay? So we've gone through several stages of this emotion and discussion. How important is it for the community to come back together for, I don't know, let's say 4th of July, let's say Labor Day, you know, and come together as a community and kind of reflect maybe on what happened and where we're at today and keep the dialogue going? Because I think earlier you said, you know, this could be a year and a half, 2 year, 3 year process. And so is it important for communities to plan social events, okay, that can help, I don't know, relieve some of the stress that still is going to be taking place?
100% emphatically, that's a yes. For multiple reasons. What are the normal rhythms that the community would have been going through? would the community normally have come together for 4th of July, for Memorial Day that we just passed, for Labor Day at the end of the season? What are those normal gathering times and gathering places that people come together with? Maintaining that normal routine will be really important for people to have that kind of as a milestone, an anchor to their lives of, okay, yeah, we did this last year. This is a normal part of my life. We've been doing this for 3 decades, in fact. I rely on this. This is one of those social gatherings that rejuvenates me, that I get to be with people that are important to me. So that maintenance of that normal routine is absolutely critical. But then in times of recovery like this, those times are when that natural support system is able to come together and kind of let the defenses down and have this shared experience of, yeah, I'm exhausted, or yeah, I'm sad, or yeah, I'm pissed. I'm really angry that we have to do this. And fill in the blank, whatever else shows up in that process. But that social time together, that support system coming together and supporting each other is fantastic, because we naturally do better when we're taking care of others than when we're just focused on ourselves. And so if I hear from David that he's struggling and he hears from me that I'm struggling, that then becomes the shared experience that we can support each other in. It's not, oh yeah, Kurt's got it all together, and David goes away feeling, I don't have it all together. I got to do this all on my own. That can be real detrimental. So there's normal routines, there's normal social gatherings, and then if you can add to them to help bring people, like David started with, getting them out of the shell, that's really important. Because as we move forward, there are going to be those trigger times. And often we just say it's that assessment of loss process. You see the big things, you take care of the fences, you take care of the cattle that were lost, and you start rebuilding the herd, you rebuild the sheds, you rebuild the barns. But then you start recognizing, wow, that tree is gone. That has an impact. If the home was lost, you have all those trinkets. Christmas is going to come and you don't have the ornaments that have been passed down generation to generation. Thanksgiving is going to happen and the normal Thanksgiving routine that would have happened can't happen because the gravy boat is destroyed or, grandma's table that we all gathered around is no longer available. All those things become these triggers in that we're assessing again and hit with that loss of, oh, I don't have this thing that had meaning for me any longer.
David, let's kind of follow up on that a little bit. As you have talked to other ranchers and as you have gotten around the state in your role as president of the Kansas Livestock Association, how are people doing? What's been your experience? Do you have any anecdotes that you can kind of pass along about how people are getting along now?
On the shell outside, it all looks pretty good because we're just overwhelmed with the nationwide support of us. You know, the people that have given financially, the hay, the fencing equipment. People just had a couple from Parsons, Kansas that was going to go to Memphis, Tennessee over spring break. They decided to come pull posts and wire, and they were black at the end of each day. And those people, they just give you so much hope, you know, that we can move forward. So all that has really helped in terms of being able to get through the next day. And everyone I talk to talk about that, you know, coming from all over the nation and the support. You know, how I've been able to get through it along with that is through my church community, you know, and we just thank God for all the miracles that happened during that fire, because there should have been a lot of people dead, you know, after you talked to all the people and everything that we did that we shouldn't have done. But God's hand was involved in all that. And us getting together, and I guess that's part of that social community Dr. Drennan was talking about, that we're able to get together and express. And you know, we give a lot of those stories to God, and we're just thankful to have that there for us. So in terms of the whole state and that, the people that are affected, it's been pretty positive. I did talk to someone last week that said that they think that things are starting to set in now, and they're starting to see people angry at different times that they don't usually see anger. And I don't know, I guess I asked Dr. Drennan, I think this is probably, and I told them, I thought that was probably just a natural flow of this whole dealing with it. And one question I had was, you know, all those different stages of grief. Everyone stays in certain stages a different amount of time, but, I guess how long is the, when should we start to be worried? I know you went through a lot of that, the eating and the sleeping and all that, but, you know, if I see someone that's not usually mad and I see them mad for 30 days straight, well, do we need to start doing something?
Absolutely. And again, you know, the stages of grief, I tend to call them phases because, like you said, they're different for every one of us, and we'll re-enter them. So there will be, you know, you'll have that period of anger, you'll go back into and maybe move toward acceptance, and then go back into, you know, this bargaining with God period again, and then end up back in anger, or sadness, depression. You know, that's all kind of a moving target. It's always best to ask yourself, the person that you're worried about, do you think you need something different? Do you think you need some support? The angry person may be in this place of, absolutely not, I can do this on my own. Because that's what anger is about. It pushes us to do for ourselves, to fight that battle that has to be fought. But when it starts getting in the way of functioning, when it gets in the way of putting that foot forward the next day, when it gets in the way of relating to your kids or relating to your spouse, that's when you really got to take a look at it. I think one of the problems with being in relationship is then those people become our number one target. When we're feeling lousy, when we're feeling angry, those are the ones that bear the brunt of that anger. And then that can really result in a negative impact on the whole family and even on the whole community. So being able to say, look, I'm worried about you. You've been angry for a while now, and while that's normal, how's that impacting your ability to be a husband, be a dad?
And I think that's going to be really hard for some of these ranchers and agriculturalists to admit. You know, I'm not depressed. You know, I'm not angry. We kind of compartmentalize it, right? And it's going to be real hard, you know, for me to go say, Dave, man, you've been angry for a month, and, you know, that's not normal for you. You need to go see, you need to get some help, all right? That's going to be a hard sell. And I think, Dave, I think you would agree with that, you know. And it goes back to being proud and not admitting that, you know, we have any weaknesses and some of those things. And that's a tough, tough thing for somebody to admit that I need some help, I think.
Absolutely. And so what I suggest is never tell the person that you think they need help. Ask them what help they need.
Okay.
Say, hey, we're all having a tough time here. What would be helpful for you? What would help lighten the load? What would help take this off your shoulders? How are things working for you right now? Are your kids afraid of you? Are your kids staying away? Have you had some good quiet time with your partner, with your spouse? Or is everybody kind of holding you off at arm's length? Ask questions. That's probably the best thing to do, is just ask questions.
Gentlemen, we've covered a pretty wide range of things here. It is indeed a difficult topic to talk about, and it's a difficult topic, I think, to discuss even in a forum like this, because there's so much to the human being and the human doing that can get complicated. Is there anything else that comes to mind that you think we need to talk about? Any other areas that you think ought to be covered?
I could go on for hours and hours and hours. You give me an open-ended question like that, and it would be a good weekend. But maybe let me close with a couple of thoughts. Typically, with disaster and with crisis, we make it through an event like this, and we start having thoughts and feelings that are not part of who we were before the events. And we start asking ourselves, am I going crazy? And the first answer is, no, you're not. What you're experiencing is really common after an event like this. And it's important to recognize and remember that while you were in a good routine before the event, the event has shattered that routine. And we never do anything completely as an individual. We have those people that we've relied on to get to where we're at. We've had those resources, those opportunities that have helped us create the business, the ranch, the community that we've now created. And to think that we can recreate it all by ourselves is definitely a fallacy. That you will be stronger if you rely on your community than if you try and do this on your own. And absolutely no one is unaffected by this kind of event. It impacts everybody. So you're not alone in your experiences. You're not alone in struggling with the sadness or the frustration or the anger. You're not alone with the changes in appetite or sleep. You're not alone with the barbs that you throw out at your wife or your kids or the dog or the horse. Those are all really normal reactions to this very abnormal event. You know, most of the folks that are watching this video have not had this kind of an experience before. It's brand new. And it's a new skill set that you will develop. And then maybe in 20, 30, 40 years, if this happens again, you'll be that resource to provide guidance to the young ranchers in your community and the young families that need that guidance. So we have to pass this on. This is one of those knowledge bases and experience bases that have to be passed on. So with that, I encourage maybe your communities to reach out to the people of, I'm blanking on the town name that got hit by the tornado in 2007, Greensburg. You're going to have some very experienced people in that community that could probably provide a lot of guidance to your ranching community about their recovery. It's a close-by resource. might be a good place to reach out and ask for that consultation, that expertise.
Dave, any last thoughts?
No, once again, thank you for allowing me to be part of this. And Dr. Drennan, I really appreciate your expertise and the way you've communicated things. I've learned a bunch, and I hope people will listen to you, and we need to put some of those things into action. So Ron and Bert, both, thank you for allowing me to be part of this.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining us for this, I think, an important topic. This may be the most important edition of the Beef Roundtable that we've done, okay, to really, really help people. So thank you very much for that. So that wraps up this edition of the Beef Roundtable. Please join us next month for another look at the issues and trends that affect you.